What political activities did you do during the Russian Revolution?
During the Russian Revolution, my husband and I, we were living in New York in a cooperative vegetarian restaurant. We had a cooperative vegetarian restaurant. We were living in New York, and we had all kinds of meetings, and all the people that were belonging to the anarchist group, before the revolution, we were all together. There was socialism, and there was anarchism. There was not the Bolshevik kind of socialism. So we were like one group, and we were always meeting. We had a lot of lectures, and we gave out some anarchist literature and newspaper. That was in the Jewish language. And after the revolution, we found out who is an anarchist and who is not, because those that became the communists, they were really not anarchists either. So that was kind of a period of that particular time. But also in that particular time, there were all the very interesting campaign speeches in the Ferrer colony. There was a man, what was his second name, August, I forgot the name. There was a brother of a socialist that was running, and he was elected in the time when Hilfried was running. It was very interesting. Now, this man that was a neighbor, but he did not belong to the Ferrer colony. There was another colony across the street from the community of the Spelten colony. There was a socialist colony, but they were German socialists. And the only contact we had was when we organized a cooperative grocery store. Some of them belonged to it, but it was really never mixed, and they were very conservative.
Who was they?
The German colony across the street. It was called the Fellowship Farm. We were the Ferrer colony, and they were the Fellowship Farm. There was a road. When we were on one side of the road, they were on the other side of the road. And this August, I can't remember the other name, I guess it'll come to me. He was leaving the part that he was leaving still belonged to the Fellowship Farm, the other one. So we didn't have very much contact with each other. This was an anarchist colony, and this were this kind of socialist. But in the colony, during the time of the Russian Revolution, the colonists that lived in the Ferrer colony, and those of the communists, we did not get into a disagreement with these people until some years later. We were working together for the school. Cooperative. We had our own roads and our own water. That was community projects. We were all working together, and it was all in friendship. But in a few years later, when the labor troubles began in the unions, this was common knowledge to everybody. I think that the pressure came from Russia, and the way they started wrecking the labor unions by arranging, fighting the union was more important than winning anything from the boss. So in those particular years, the fight between began to come into Stelton. Also, because somebody else moved in, a woman leader of this party, moved in, and to her, the politics she brought with her. So she influenced those that were living there, that were the colonists too. And so we had disagreements. We had quite a little trouble with them. Now, then they started strikes in the middle trade, for instance. And we had, most of our people were commuting to New York and working in the middle trade. And these were organizers of the unions.
Communists?
No, the anarchists. These were the people that built, people like my brother, that were the pioneers of building the union. Now, when the communists came in, they really started to wreck the unions. So, for instance, if they call a strike, which was not legitimate, they were calling the strike against the union. And they would come to the colony whenever we would have our conference. We had educational conferences, and a lot of visitors would come. They'd come with signs and picket us that our union organizers, that we are scabs, this kind of thing. So I remember my brother, who is one of the builders of the unions at that time, he was a cutter in the dressmakers union.
What's his name?
Max Stoller. One of my sisters was a communist, and she lived in Union Square. She had a restaurant. And when they fabricated lies about any other of the colonists who were not her brother, she believed everything. For instance, we had Bernard Chain, who was in the labor movement up till about last year. He retired. He was in Canada now working for the union. He was a vice president there. And he was, at that particular time, he was the manager in our grocery store. So he was not even working in the shop. But they came with a sign that Bernard Chain is scabbing. And these kind of things. So my sister believed everything. But when they came in to say the same thing about my brother, because her brother, no, she knew he wasn't a scab. For him, she stood up. But for the others, she was telling me that he was a scab. I said, he waited on me in the grocery store. How could he be a scab? This is the kind of way we had a big struggle with the communists, and they were actually wrecking the unions at the time. So this was a fight. In the later years, we had a man here, Stenzer, who was that time with the communists, but he began to hate them so much, and he became a vice president. He was a president, vice president here in Los Angeles and in New York. And I remember when he was new here, and I came to hang up a sign in the union for a cooperative, that we started a new cooperative. He wanted to know who I am, because if I'm a communist, he wouldn't let me hang up a sign. That's the way it happened. People changed. But it was a big struggle at the time. There was one slogan, if they cannot infiltrate and take over, then you have to break it. That was their way at the time. But in the colony, it took some time before those devoted colonists began to sabotage and create fights between us.
Did any of the anarchists or communists that you know get arrested during the Palmer Raids?
During the Palmer Raids, yes. During the Palmer Raids, that was a little bit later. We lived in Philadelphia at the time.
In 2021?
What year was the Palmer Raids?
About 1920.
Well, then that's what it was. It's easy to get the dates, and I can't remember them. I lived in Philadelphia, and my husband was very, very busy with the Union of Russian Workers. And on the books was his name. He was a treasurer, he was a secretary, his name was there. But one evening, and I did not participate in this, I would never leave my children alone at night, and we didn't have the style of babysitters. And most of the anarchists or socialists had their children out all night, but I had to, I was always conscious. My children's parents both died of TB, and they were a picture of health due to the fact that they had all the sunshine and fresh air and fresh food. So I did not take part on all the meetings, with some exceptions. When there was a social and we had somebody, the landlady in whose house we lived, would take care or something like that. And I wouldn't take them out even in the daytime to congested halls with cigarette smoking and all that. Well, even though at that time I didn't know how bad it is, but I just kept them out. But that didn't make me being away from the movement. I just was not physically, but my husband was there day and night, every night a meeting, you know. So when the palm raids took place, it just happened that evening that my husband was not there. So the whole group was arrested, and he was out. So according to the books, and they raided, they took the books and everything. According to the books, he was the dangerous leader. So they looked for him, and we had a house full of literature, anarchist literature. And we had a friend who became a communist, was a communist all the time, who had a little a newspaper stand, and he lived on the other side of the town. We lived in West Philadelphia, he lived in Strawberry Mansion, and that's a different part of town. So at night, I would, and my husband didn't come home, he stayed out of the house in case they get the address and they come to raid. But before that, I wanted to clear out the anarchist literature, because that would put us both into prison. So I used to carry at night as much as I could carry, the brochures, and for almost every night, take the streetcar and go to him and bring, until I carried out all the literature and didn't come home. And that took about 2-3 weeks. But meanwhile, all the people that were arrested, some of them, after the revolution, the Union of Russian Workers, it didn't say anarchist group, the Union of Russian Workers, all the Russian people came. And there were a lot of young people and older people that didn't even know what anarchism means. They came to this and they were there and they were all arrested. And they were being deported. So the only ones to take care of was he was out. So that's what he did. And sometimes when he would come over to the hall, the IWW people and the anarchists were very close at the time, working closely together. They were not enemies, they were friends working together. So they would ask him, does he know Louis Kaiser? He said, never heard of him. And they put, I guess they had some description or something. They put the pictures drawn up and put heavy mustache. My husband, it was not a hairy man. He was very light complexion with blue eyes. Never grew hair on his body. Till the last, he never shaved more than once a week. He was not a heavy hair grower. So they put the mustache on him. It made him look at as a terrible him. And there was another one. I'll have to remember to write down, the names when it comes to me. He was also out at the meeting, and they were looking for him too. So they had them both in the newspaper described as very terrible anarchists, you know. So those that were out were doing the best. Then it was necessary to visit them in the jail. So I was a sweetheart of a young fellow to go to see him and to bring him some clothes. We also had to raise money to buy some heavy winter clothes, sheepskins, and for those that were being deported. It was the middle of the winter, and if they are deported to Russia, you have to have warm clothes. So we were doing this this kind of thing.
If your husband was being looked for by the police, why was it that they didn't come and arrest you?
Oh, they didn't know where he lives or anything. They didn't know my existence. His name was in the paper of attending all the conferences and writing the minutes and all that. So he was the leader, according to them. You see. So, but they didn't know where he was. And I guess they, in the books there were no addresses of people. There were names of people. When they confiscated the books and arrested the people, they arrested no matter who was there. Some people came to a lecture without even being part of it. They arrested everybody.
And they were, when you went to jail, when you went to visit them?
Yeah, I was a sweetheart.
You pretended to be a sweetheart to be able to go in?
Yeah. What I was all of 18 years old, and he must have been 20 or 19 or 20, I don't know. something like that. It's feasible. And then that's what we did. We got people to go to visit. I didn't have to be I was never Kaiser anyway. I was always Stola.
Do you know how many of the people at the meetings were arrested in Philadelphia, around the area where you were?
I would say in the hundreds, but I can find that out. I cannot put my finger on that now. Sure, I can find it out.
Do you remember what the conditions while they were in jail were there?
Some of them were beaten up to death. Some people were killed with beatings. We had one fellow, his name was Schwartz. I don't remember, but he was beaten to death. Oh, yes, brutality, police brutality. And now somebody stands up for it. At that time, nobody could stand up even for it.
Were many of your friends arrested?
Well, everybody was my friend from the anarchist group. Didn't have any special, any other closeness with people. I didn't live that long, you know. To have accepted comrades, didn't have any special. On the outside, people that had children, and you met in the park when you were having the children, these people were not to the meetings either.
When you knew people that were deported, did you ever hear from them after they had been deported?
No, I don't remember hearing anything from anybody, but there might have been somebody, especially people that had family, might have heard. Then there was the Anarchist Red Cross, which was conducted. You heard about that? And my brother was a secretary of that. And the people from the prisons wrote. See, my brother gave me a book with all these letters. He wanted it to be safe, and somebody borrowed it, and I don't know. Till this day, he can't forgive. He says he didn't want to give it to his son, because he wanted to make sure that it's going to be preserved. And I don't know who took it away out of my shelf.
Were you very active in the Red Cross?
The Anarchist Red Cross? No. You see, this was, I'm younger, so I was not active in that. That was when I came, it was a little girl, there used to be they used to make a barn ball, it's a peasant ball. The Anarchist Red Cross used to make one, a yearly affair, which would have hundreds of people. They hired a big hall, and sometimes police would raid them too. But this was an institution, and my brother was a secretary of that. So I was so young that something stays in my mind. You'll take it out. So this was the way they raised the money. And I remember there were more than one that was writing the letters. Now, they used to write to the people in the jails in Siberia, letters like my brother or my cousin or something, and send them money. But this is how they used to raise, thousands of dollars in this way. And my brother was one of them. In Chicago, there was another group there, and his name was Boris Zelensky. He just died last year, I think. He carried on a fund for that. And there were many that were participating in that. And so they also used to look for different people to write, the different handwritings, different cities. And it was easier to help the anarchists in the Russian Tsar's prisons than it was in the communist prisons. Much harder there. Because they knew all these things. And the atrocities. And you see, many people that were in Siberia, if they had the help from the outside, many, many times they bribed the guards and they ran away. But under the communists, you couldn't do that. And the most horrible thing that impressed me deeply was one of the letters that came, from the prisoners, that they were telling us they would have have lice in the clothes, you know, planted lice in the clothes. This kind of a torture, the Tsar never had this sense for, you know, common sense for.
Are you talking about the anarchists that were in Russia after the revolution?
That's right, after the revolution. No, those are for the deported from the United States. There's a different story about them. No, those that were arrested in Russia as the anarchists, any political prisoners, were kept in the most horrible conditions. And couldn't be any worse than filling their things with lice, and it's a terrible thing. But under the Tsar, people were running away. And the Anarchist Red Cross did a lot of, gave a lot of help. Some of them were brought out. They financed their tickets to come to this country. And they made their lives easier while they were there. You were always able to buy yourself out. Russia under the Tsar was full of graft, no matter what. If it's all right to come back to my childhood, in the little town where I was, they found in our house a scale where we would weigh a pound of bread, and we sold a piece of some bread, and they found a little wine that my father used for the Saturday, so that's a violation, and they fined us, I don't know, 100 rubles or 50 rubles, and that was just like the people didn't have this kind of money. So what they would do, they would come and take your furniture, your bed things, your pillows and things like that. So if you gave a ruble or a half a ruble to the policeman, he would come and tell you before it happened, so you could put all your stuff in the neighbor's house, and after they come to look, you put it back. That's the way we were existing. That's the way all Russia lived. Existing under graft. But under the communists, it was not as easy. You couldn't do that.
When the people who you knew were being deported, you were still in Philadelphia. You weren't like in New York when
no,
they were being deported from.
No, we were in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Were you getting first-hand accounts from anarchists in New York about what the deportation is doing?
The deportation in Philadelphia, those that were close did get some information from them themselves, maybe. See, she goes to you, not to me, because I'll never take her. these raids were in all the cities. They were all over. Yeah, so not being in New York, I know in a general way, because much was written about it in the Freiburgerstimme and the other things that were coming out. It was a very terrible time.
Were you in any kind of demonstrations against the raids, or was there no way that you felt you could protest?
In the Palmer times, well, there were meetings, mass meetings, but you couldn't go parade or something, you'd be arrested. There was no such thing like the people who are going protesting against the war. It was a different thing, because first of all, many of the legitimate people were against the war, senators and all that. So that was not the same thing, even though the communists call it brutality. That was to some extent brutality, but in general, all kinds of people were protesting the war. But in the former raids, there was no such a thing. Everybody was suspected, was arrested. Of course, when there was a big mass meeting, the socialists were a legitimate group. They were campaigning and all that, and they had plenty to say, and it was possible. Even under those circumstances, I think we had more freedom than possible in the dictatorship countries.
How long was it until your husband was safe to come out from under hiding?
Well, at least about a month or two before he started coming home, until we were sure. that there's nothing. You see, nobody's address was, they saw the name in the books, but there's no addresses in the books. So it took quite a long time to live, but I had all the literature out of the house by carrying them out at night.
What were the next political activities that you took part in after the raids were over? Were you involved in the Mooney case?
Oh, that's later years.
Yeah.
Of course, all the way. In the Saka Mazzetti case, the time we were in Stelton. And we had our experience working together with communists for Saka Mazzetti, for the Gastonian strikers, the miners and the weavers, and you name it, we were in everything. And we had our experience when we gathered money together, we felt the anarchists felt. That time we were the Rotary Freedom Group. The English group was a strong group. We had the Kropotkin group in Stelton and the Rotary Freedom group in Stelton and in New York. We used to go into New York to the meetings. And we also, with the Freie Arbeiterstimme, there were your youth groups, and there was the Vanguard group, the youth group, and there were lots of activity. And we were with all the activities. And living in Stelton, we did a lot of work together. We had we built a Kropotkin library there, so we had our meetings in the library. We kept up the meeting, and Hippolyte Howe, we built a special room for him in the back of the library, and he lived there. So there was lots of activities at the time in Stelton. But with the
what kind of a person do you remember him as being?
Havel. Well, Hippolyte Havel? Well, give you lots of things to think about.
Well, I know, but how do you remember?
Well, he was, he had a big vice, he was drinking a lot. He was a drunk. But he was he was a writer. He edited the Road to Freedom. He edited many other things. There's quite a lot of things written in the books about him. Some books that he gave me, I guess they're all gone. I don't know. I'll have to look over and see. in New York, in the Greenwich Village, well, that's not mine. I only know about it because I didn't live there. He was mixed up with all the artists and writers, and it was quite a character. And at one time, I think he was Emma Goldman's. That is whatever is in the books. You can see that. Yeah, I'd like to talk about that.
When you were doing the political campaigning, but activities in terms of Sacco Vanzetti and all, what kind of things were you doing? Organizing?
In the Sacco Vanzetti case, I was the youngest of everybody. But we were doing a lot of the work, and the communists, that's what I wanted to bring out. When they worked with us, the money never came to the committee, to the Saka Mazzetti meeting. And if you questioned, they said, well, the daily worker, it works for them, so they give it to the daily worker. But the committee that had to pay the lawyers never got anything from them. And the same thing with the striking funds. So we had to divide with them and work on our own. In the colony, it was not easy because we were like one family there. But we found out the hard way that you can't work together with communists in anything, because they think if they support their press, it's as good as it's justified. And we didn't think that way. We knew that we had to send money to the committee to do whatever they can for Sacramento area, not just Duck.